The court will proceed to the fourth case, Paul versus Brother Miller Medical Center.
Richard Nell representing Kamaljit Singh Paul, who's the appellant in this matter. This was a case that was decided in summary judgment motion in front of the Honorable Judge Griesbach at the United States Eastern District Court of Wisconsin, and subsequently was filed for appeal by us. The primary nature of the case is a discrimination claim brought under Civil Rights Act 1981 and 2000D, and an accompanying breach of contract claim for under the bylaws of the hospital bylaws. The issues are, that appear before this court are primarily those of material factual dispute. And the relief request is that this be remanded down to the district court for furtherance of the case. The primary reason that I believe that we're here is I think we, the plaintiffs, did not do a good job of indicating to the court that the difference between privileges and medical staff membership are significant in relying upon how the hospital is to operate. We certainly laid out the law, but we didn't do it in a way that made it very simple. And the principal issue is medical staff membership comes first and privileging comes second, but all within the same process. And when one looks at that, it becomes much easier to understand why the board certification had nothing to do with the medical staff membership that was applied for. Dr. Paul, of course, is an Asian Indian descent and of the Sikh creed. He held privileges from 1991 to 2003 at the same hospital.
Does the record show what the ethnic composition of this staff is? Does the record show what the ethnic composition of the staff, the medical staff, is at this medical center?
It does not. He had active medical staff membership from 1991 to 2003, and during that entire time held neurosurgical privileges. He had no privileges in OBGYN, he had no privileges in any of the other...
Privileged neurosurgery?
Yes, he was.
He could perform surgery under that?
Yes, he could, Your Honor.
Did he?
Yeah, very, very few during that time, Court Judge.
And he did some?
I believe he did some. In the time period through 2003,
mm-hmm.
I think in 2003 is when he started doing some.
Well, that was when he wanted additional privileges.
Sure.
That's what they precluded him from doing was the surgery. That is work as a neurologist.
Correct. What they did in 2003 was that they moved it from active and moved it down to, I want to say passive, that's not it, but more of a...
Did he have privileges to perform neurosurgery before he made the second application?
Yes, he did.
But he didn't perform any?
In 2003, he did.
No, I'm talking about the period of time before he made the application now under litigation.
I'm not sure. I thought there were some in 2002, but I am not sure. The Big Care didn't receive its level 2 trauma verification status until 1998. Yet in 1999 and again in 2001, Dr. Paul's active staff membership was renewed both years, and his neurological privileges were renewed.
As I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the beef is that not that he was not on the staff, they're probably willing to let him stay on the staff but not perform surgery because he's not privileged. Is that
I don't think that's quite accurate. The beef is that they reduced the number of privileges that he can perform to in essence 10 a year. And because
they would perform 10 surgical procedures a year?
Correct. What, and what would be a small, I can't describe one, but it could be a very small issue versus an entire spinal column problem. And the concern was that the health insurance provider, which was a significant one in this area, would not allow him to do those procedures after 2002 anywhere but at this hospital. The other hospital system he had, he could still do them. And he had been uncomfortable prior, but that's in the record, about performing there, but he now was at a point where his only option was performing those services at this hospital in active staff membership, along with the privileging of neurosurgery, that would allow him to perform those surgeries. In neither 1999 nor 2001 did Dr. Paul apply for trauma team privileges or seek the credentialing for that. Anytime during that time frame from 1998 to 2003, Dr. Paul was not asked to perform on the local trauma team or perform any call coverage for that. In 1993, Dr. Paul's staff privileges were reduced to courtesy. That's what I meant to say earlier. In 2003. And at that point in time, it was stated that because he was a neurosurgeon, that he had to perform level 2 trauma call coverage and therefore was required to be on the active medical staff.
So what is the evidence bearing on that? Isn't that the nub of your case, that you say he wasn't required to be on the trauma team in order to have access to
right.
So he didn't have to be board certified. So what does the record show on that?
The record shows that the director of the trauma team, Dr. Gordon, indicated that it was a right that one got to apply for, that it wasn't something that one automatically was required to do. And a review of the bylaws, the medical staff would show that everyone that's on an active medical staff is not on the trauma team and the trauma team coverage.
Well, but it's an anesthesiologist and some other, isn't that your two people in that who are not, who's the other? One was an anesthesiologist, the other was also
a general surgeon.
But the bylaw said certification was recommended but not required, but in case of neurosurgery, it was required.
The bylaws say nothing about trauma. The only trauma, reference to trauma that we have in this case is that of an American college saying that trauma is a separate program, and the testimony by the director of trauma who says it's a separate program that requires separate credentialing. The credentialing for surgery is one thing, the credentialing for pediatrics is one thing, and so is credentialing for trauma. In the instance of the anesthesiologist, it's not so much that he was required to be board certified, although in the early stages they clearly indicated they thought he had to be board certified. But he was a part of the trauma department, or his group was, and he was allowed to be able to have all the coverage so he wouldn't have to take call coverage. Another significant difference is, in the brief of the appellee, is that they're saying that emergency room equals trauma call coverage. That is not the case. The bylaws only deal with emergency room coverage. In Wisconsin, Dr. Gordon stated in his testimony, it's in the record, that in 1998, there were only two hospitals in Wisconsin that were level 2 trauma call coverage hospitals. Every other hospital in Wisconsin, almost all of them, had emergency room departments, and all of those, as you and I just said, which are going to be expected to be in the emergency room. That's the same thing with the Fayette Clark Hospital, is all of the active staff members have to be available for the emergency room. Only those that are certified and credentialed or privileged in trauma are allowed to be in the trauma team and trauma call coverage. this This distinction was brought forth by the American College in its amicus brief. Why is it important? It's important because when you look at the tests, the McDonald test, the four-prong test, prong number two is the court felt that Dr. Paul could not meet prong number two because he wasn't eligible. He wasn't eligible to be active medical staff. The reality is he was eligible, as he was all the way in all the prior years. He applied for neurosurgical privileges, and that was it. He didn't apply for trauma call coverage. So he was eligible under the second prong to be on the active medical staff. He fit everything under the active medical staff. There were some allegations that he couldn't do emergency room. Yes, he could do emergency room. He hadn't been asked to do it, but he could do that. So under that test, then of course the burden would then move to the defendant or the appellee. Rather than have this merging as was proposed by the district court, there's no merging that needed to occur because we've already set forth the four elements for the case. And so that's very important. Once you get to that point, then the question is, was the burden on the defendant was a contextual in nature? And by the proof that was submitted, that the decision to not allow him to have active medical staff privileges could not have been decided on the fact that he did not apply for and did not see trauma call coverage.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Mr. Hickey?
May it please the court. Good morning.
Even clear of my confusion, when he asked for the last time with the case at issue, when he applied, was he just asking for a renewal of what he already had?
Yes, he was.
Why, in the record, do you think the trial court suggested the record was silent as to why he had the privileges before if he wasn't entitled to them?
Can I make one? I'll answer the question directly if I can make one distinction.
Sure, I'm easy to get along with. Go ahead.
Thank you. Because I think you got it just right. And if the appellant now understands the difference between privileging and staff membership, it's the first time. Because when you read their briefs in the trial court and you read their briefs in this court, they don't understand the distinction. If I can start at the beginning very briefly, please. For a physician to practice in a hospital, you have to have some sort of membership. That comes first. That's before you get any privilege whatsoever. A privilege means the right to do something in
the hospital. Well, admitted to the staff and the card privilege is different. With the admitting privileges, without admitting members of privileges, supervision, all sorts of things. Yes.
Exactly right. You have to be a member of the staff, and then you have to ask for certain privileges.
Right.
If you're an obstetrician, can I have the right to do C-sections? Can I do lower forceps deliveries? These are all separate privileges.
Stay away from abortion. We don't want to hear any more in those cases.
I will come in with you. Now, there are five different types of staff membership, and the ones that are critical here is the active staff membership, which is unlimited as the number of patients you admit per year. It's separate than privileges. Maybe you're only admitted to give a blood transfusion. Maybe you can do nothing more.
Yep.
But you can admit an unlimited number of patients per year.
Usually the hospital's happy with that arrangement.
But responsibilities go with you, Your Honor. It's not just a one-way ticket.
I understand that.
You have to serve on committees. You have to be available to take call. It's a pain in the rear end. Now.
Or some end.
Yes. The second type of membership here is a courtesy staff membership, which means every 2 years you can admit up to 20 patients. And if you want to admit more than 20 patients in 2 years, then you've got to move over and serve on hospital committees and do some of the work that keeps the hospital going for which you're not compensated. Dr. Paul had full staff membership from 1992 to 2002.
He could do anything.
He could do anything.
Okay.
Now, he could do anything. You're exactly right. He didn't admit one patient during that 10-year period, Your Honor. You were exactly right. That 10-year period, before he applied in January of 2003, he didn't admit one patient, didn't perform one surgery. He may have loved to save people's lives, as he said in his brief, but he never came forward and said, I want to serve in your emergency room. What happened is, in 2003, his application is part of the record in this case, he disclosed that he had a 4-day suspension at his other hospital that concerned quality care of patients. That resulted in later examination of his new application. And the truth of the matter is, he slipped by for 10 years. He was in non-entity. He didn't admit a patient. He didn't do a surgery. They rubber stamped him every year after 1998. And the change came in 1998, because that is when this hospital's emergency room was elevated to a level trauma 2 status. It was the only level 2 trauma status department in northeastern Wisconsin. That's a long way from Chicago with your great hospitals, but up by us, that's a pretty big deal.
What year did it become a level 2?
I'm sorry?
What year did it become?
1998, sir.
1998, yes.
And Mr. Nell is right. The hospital did give Dr. Paul full staff membership in 1999 and 2001, and they shouldn't have. If they would have taken a closer look at his credentials, he wouldn't have received that status in 1999 nor 2001. He slipped beneath the cracks because he wasn't doing any business there. He didn't do any surgeries. He didn't admit any patients. They didn't look closely enough at his application. In 2003, a red flag arises because there's a 4-day suspension at Mercy Medical Center in Oshkosh. And he also says, I want to do more procedures now at this hospital. So they take a closer look, and they realize he's not board certified. Now we come back to your question. A person can have a courtesy staff membership and not participate in trauma call at all. And if Dr. Paul were anything but a neurosurgeon, an orthopedic surgeon, a general surgeon, or an emergency medicine surgeon, we wouldn't be here today. Because all of the other specialties, cardiologists, gastroenterologists, none of them are required to be board certified to take call at a level 2 trauma center. But 4 specialties are neurosurgery, orthopedic surgery, emergency medicine, and general surgery. And Dr. Paul is a neurosurgeon. Now, for State Clark to keep its status as a level 2 trauma center, it has to provide board-certified specialists in those 4 areas to the general public. And if they don't do it, they don't maintain their level 2 trauma status. This is not a matter of opting in or opting out. Right now, there are 6 board-certified, or I should go back, in 2003, there were 6 board-certified neurosurgeons at Theta Clark. They would have loved for another board-certified neurosurgeon to be under full staff membership and take 1/7 of the call in that emergency department on evenings and weekends. No neurosurgeon likes being called out of bed at 2 o'clock in the morning to come to the hospital to take care of an intoxicated motorist. So it is a burden, it is a sense of responsibility that has to be shared. If you are in those 4 groups, neurosurgery, orthopedic surgery, emergency medicine, or general surgery, according to the bylaws, you must participate when requested in the emergency department. And that's set forth, Your Honors.
The American College of Surgeons, their amicus, say that as long as he doesn't get involved in trauma stuff, he doesn't have to be board certified.
Exactly.
That is correct.
It's exactly right.
You can't. Under the rules, he has to participate and they won't give him privilege.
That's it. They won't give him full staff membership. Because it's not fair to the other 5 or 6 neurosurgeons who every sixth week, have to be on call for 72 hours. Nobody wants it. If they started to say, you know what, neurosurgeons, orthopedic surgeons, you can opt out of trauma call and still have full staff membership here. You can still admit as many patients as you want per year, but you don't have to take emergency call. Your Honors, which of those would say, I'll take every Memorial Day weekend, every Labor Day weekend, every Christmas holiday, I'll come in? it wouldn't happen. It is a burden, it is a responsibility that is shared by members of active staff. People on the courtesy staff do not have to do that. So this is not a matter of an amicus being filed by the American College of Surgeons. Your Honor hit it exactly correct. If this man need not provide coverage in the emergency room, the ACS, the American College, couldn't care less if he's board certified or not. But if they thought we have sent Dr. Paul into that emergency room in 2001 or 2002 or 2003 to see a critically ill patient, they would have been in trouble with the American College of Surgeons. And their level 2 trauma distinction would have been jeopardized because he's not board certified. And that was Dr. Paul's choice. Then we hit the scenario of the alternative pathway that in certain limited circumstances, if you go to northern Wisconsin, if you go to Boulder Junction, or far outreaching areas of ours where there are small hospitals, Howard Young comes to mind in Minocqua, you can't get 4 or 5 board certified neurosurgeons or orthopedic surgeons to live up there. It's great in the summer, but the 9 months in between, they all pack up and go home. So in rare exceptions where you can't recruit those specialties, then there is a dispensation, if you will. There's 9 different criteria you have to meet. It's called the alternative pathway. And if you meet that, then you can be at a level 2 trauma center, even though you're not board certified, if you're a neurosurgeon, orthopedic surgeon, general surgeon, etc. As of the date of his deposition in May of 2005, although requested to do so, Dr. Paul had not submitted the information that would have allowed him to be considered for the dispensation, that would have allowed him to receive the alternative pathway designation by the American College of Surgeons as opposed to the board certification process. If Dr. Paul is not eligible to take emergency coverage in the only ER that exists at Zeta Clark, is there a level 2 trauma center? It's of his doing because he's not board certified and because he did not pursue the alternative pathway. And no other neurosurgeon on staff at Zeta Clark is treated any differently than Dr. Paul. Thank you.
And Mr. Hickey, sooner the time we start, you may have a minute for a reply.
Nothing in the record reflects that those other 6 neurosurgeons don't want to have additional help. In fact,
Mr. Mill, if the medical center doesn't like Indians, why did they give him this free ride for 10 years? Are they inconsistent with an inference of discrimination?
In the record, we indicated that in the early years, Dr. Paul had significant problems with trying to get block time and things of that nature. When Dr. Paul decided to just kind of lay low and he had found another alternative source to be able to perform surgeries in that health insurance for that health insurance company, everyone was happy. There was no issue. Once he decided that he started asking for block time in 2002 and 2003.
What's block time?
A block time is in the surgery center, you get a dedicated section of time that's just for you. The staff will be there for you, and you can use it and unless you don't use it. And that's a big thing for surgeons. It's an ego thing. The more block time you get, the bigger are you in the food chain. It's really important to know the emergency room does not equal trauma room.
You may finish your thought.
The trauma is, the record is clear, trauma is a different program from the emergency room. And when you look at the what's required to be an active staff member, he could be an active staff member, and he clearly did not have to be in the trauma program. Thank you.
All right, thanks to both counsel, all counsel. Case is taken under advisement. Court of procedure.